Hello and welcome to the Feminine Power Podcast. In today's episode, I speak to inspiring, powerful, sexy, full of life, Hoda Mohammed Ali. A survivor of female genital mutilation who had been helping women who had this experience all over the world to not only heal but thrive. Through her activism, charity work, trainings, and herself being the example of a thriving woman. She's a human rights activist, children's book author, sexual health nurse, and a woman who endlessly shines her light and is truly connected to her body and pleasure. Hoda's story gives hope and inspiration to hundreds of millions of women affected by FGM, and to all who had a physical trauma and feel as if that true connection won't ever become available to them. Her story truly proves otherwise. Hoda inspires women to embrace every part of themselves, to celebrate their sexuality, and to confidently step into a life filled with joy and pleasure. And in this episode, we are unpacking how to turn past pain into a powerful source of energy, how to shed self-doubt, and how to truly love the body you're in. So if you've ever felt that your body or your experiences are barriers to living fully, get ready to hear a story that proves otherwise. For us women, it is possible to have it all and embody our truth and power in all areas of life. Feminine Power Podcast is your guide to reconnecting with your feminine essence, reclaiming your power, and rising into your fullest potential. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, co-founder of Feel, the feminine embodiment platform. And here on this podcast, I interview our expert community and our members, and we together share transformative tools, intimate conversations, and embodiment practices, bringing you a wealth of wisdom and practical tools to support your journey. Follow this podcast for your weekly inspiration, and if you'd like to go deeper into your embodiment journey and the awakening of your sexual energy, check out our online membership linked in this podcast description. Welcome to the Feminine Power Podcast, Hoda. I'm so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me. We're back again together.
Yes. And I know how important the conversation that I want to share is today. And your story, the luckiest girl in the world.
Oh, and the luckiest girl alive, yes. She's been in my head for a very long time.
Yeah. I want to hear your story from you. How did you get where you are? Where were you born? How did your life begin? How did you get to the UK? And how did you become this luckiest girl alive?
Oh, wow. We're going to go through it quickly. I was born in Somalia, which is the north part of Somalia. Yeah. And it was British colonized. It's called Somaliland. I was born there. I was born to the most beautiful, to me, in my eyes, magical family. My mother had my sister and my four brothers before I was born. Then she met my dad, who was from the south, which is Mogadishu, the south of Somalia, the Italian colonized. And I was born. I was his firstborn. My mom is sixth child, but it was beautiful. We grow up having a beautiful life. My dad was in the army. He was end up being head of the army on that area. We had a beautiful life where every Friday we'll go to the beach, eat some fish and swim. Even though I couldn't swim, whenever my dad was around, he would put me around his shoulders and go to the beach. And yeah, so that is how I grew up. But unfortunately, after that beautiful life, while I was in that beautiful life, I had something called female genital mutilation. I'm not sure how many people know this, but for us it was something that was normal. You know, we grew up in Somalia. Every woman had it. I thought every single woman around the world, even talking to you, Maria, I thought would had FGM, you know. And so it was normal. I remember the day before the cutting, we had a big party and we got a big you know, I had my hair done. We had henna because we're in a Muslim country, so they did the henna. I remember that's the first time I got a watch as a gift as well. But it was normal. Like, I didn't think it was anything that was abnormal. And yeah, the procedure happened.
And can you share a little bit, what is the procedure? Because I believe not many people can understand truly what this is, if you're able to.
Yeah. So female genital mutilation, or cutting, known a lot of part of the world, is a procedure that removes a total removal of the clitoris or partial removal of the clitoris, labia minora, labia majora. So there's actually four different types. So I'll just go through the types first. Type one is a cut or a slit of the clitoris. Normally they don't have a lot of stitches that involve, but then it depends of the cutting, because now we're seeing different type ones. But naturally, it is a cut, a slit, or a cut of the clitoris, not a stitch involved. Type two is sometimes partial removal of the clitoris, labia minora, labia majora. They pull the skin together and they stitch it halfway, just halfway, so like five stitches. That means that woman is partially have in vulva is open. Type three, it is total removal of the clitoris, labia minora, labia majora. They pull the skin together and they stitch it all the way down, and then they leave a little hole that is no bigger than matchstick. They expected the girl to have her urine, pass her urine in that little hole. When you when she have her period, to have her period, that little hole. But when she gets married, her husband have to force himself to open. I will go back again why FGM happened. Type 4 is a procedure that involves, again, FGM is a procedure involved for non-medical reasons. So type 4, we have a different type 4s in Western and practicing community. Let us make that clear. Type 4 is stretching, burning, or doing anything to the female genitalia for non-medical reasons. So say I'm part of the world, they stretch the labia from a girl from as soon as that girl is born. So let's say 40 days old to 5 years old. This is the softest part as a human body, which is similar to the vulva, is similar to the labia. So what they do with type 4, they stitch, they break the tissue between and they stretch it twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. So I want you to imagine being a child who just born and somebody is pinching you and they break in the tissue between the skin and the muscles. I know. Also, we didn't say warning. We need to put the warning.
We will put the warning.
Right? And what they do is that they will stretch it because they believe having longer labia is beautiful. So I grew up in Somalia where they cut the labia, but part of the world, they have the longer labia is beautiful. But wait, when they finish stretching, they burn all around it. So they will put a fire into, I don't know, whatever that is that you can burn, and they will burn it all around it. So it's like a decoration that this girl now has passed. Her labia is that long and it passed. But can I tell you most the saddest part for me as well? Is the Europe. We have a place called Harley Street in London. Harley Street, everybody goes to Harley Street to have plastic surgery, right? If I want to have my nose done, if I want to have my boobs done, whatever. Harley Street, they do what's called labiaplasty, which is called vagina designer. And who benefit that is a lot. It is the porno community, the pornographic community. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. However, I could go to Harley Street with my English white friend and said I wanted to have labiaplasty. My white friend can have it done, but I would not have, they would not let me to have it done.
Okay.
Do you know why?
No.
Because that I am from a country practice female genital mutilation or cutting, they will not do that on me, because what they're going to do is dissimilar. They're going to do the same as FGM. Mm-hmm. But because there's a law against it, they will only do it to my white friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I hate using color or anything, but that's the reality. If you are white English, if you are white European, you can go and have vagina designer. But if I'm a black Somali girl who wanted to have my vagina designed, I would not be able to. How did that make sense?
Well, I am a big believer that all vaginas are naturally beautiful and completely diverse and naturally beautiful. So even some people have these different procedures done to them against their will. Some people have different procedures done for certain beliefs. Yeah. And some people just do it for because they watch a lot of porn and they believe that something is wrong with them and something should look different. Mm. And that's the biggest mistake. Like, please don't do that, because you are beautiful as you are. And porno is not natural and not real. And it's not, it doesn't show what we're supposed to look like. It is just, yeah.
I don't fight with anybody what they wanted to do to their body, as long as you are adult. Yeah. You could, you are allowed to do what you need to do in your life as an adult. But what are we telling to the future generation? Mm. Because if we have this kind of organization, or it's not organization, but this kind of clinics that exist that said, oh, if you don't like how you look, we can change your look. We're not empowering children. Mm. We're not telling children, you are beautiful just the way you are, right? Yeah. But because we have clinics, you can come and change that. Mm. And sadly, in not this year, but 2 years ago, the highest number of girls that was by the NHS, there were over 15,000 girls that was referred to have labiaplasty through the NHS. And these are children who have went to their doctors, told them they do not like the way they look. And they sent them. Why? Because we have a problem with porn.
Yeah.
With children, right?
Yeah.
I work in primary school. Mm. I work in secondary school. Children have access to pornographic material. And what they see, they think that is normal. Mm-hmm. And when they meet that little girl, you know, that innocent girlfriend, boyfriend thing, it's not innocent anymore, because they like, I don't like the way you look. You're not supposed to have that. That creates a psychological problem for these little girls, because they're not old enough to decide what is good or bad for their body, right?
Yeah.
They go to the GPs, they go back and back and back, and the GPs say, okay, I'll send you to Harley Street to have vagina designer. We're going to remove your labia minora, because you didn't like how it looked, and that is it. Mm. That is not the solution.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, removal of parts of labia may lead to less sensitivity, and that's non-reversible. It's just non-reversible, and people just don't have enough knowledge about it. Doctors even don't mention that much. So it's so important that people just love themselves a little more and know themselves a little more.
Yeah, but sometimes when society doesn't tell you to love yourself as a little girl, or a woman who's got a problems, like you're depressed, or you have some sort of psychological problem, or you just woke up and said, I don't like the way I look. Society, you know, and I think that's allowed. I think we women should be looking at the mirror. I wake up some mornings, I'm like, who is this? Do you know? Course. But I know it's me. Let me go and go for a walk. I don't feel myself today. Yeah. Let me go and do some yoga.
Yeah.
But in reality, that not a lot of these girls and a lot of these women who are watching and seeing this really do realize. But also I do worry here in the UK, because there is a lot of access to pornographic material for children who is not supposed to have that. So there's a lot that work need to be done with parents also, just to empower their kids to understand and also to figure out when your child is upstairs, they're using your internet. They are using the laptop you bought for them. They are using the phone that you bought for them. And they're watching porn upstairs in the room where you pay the electricity, you pay the gas, you pay the rent, but you don't know. And also, yeah, so responsibility comes to the adults as well. But yeah, ask me more questions.
No, and what do people just, I want to touch deeper on FGM, so that also those who had that can find certain answers, because I find you very inspiring in the way that you approach your body and your pleasure. What I would like to see is, for people who had FGM, what the life is like, what are potential issues, but there's also what are the potential solutions.
I can't speak for everybody.
Yeah,
There are over 230 million women and girls who are alive today who had FGM.
Yeah,
female genital mutilation or cutting is a worldwide issue.
Yeah,
and this year alone, International Women's Day in March, we had 30 more million women and girls come forward who had FGM.
Yeah,
so it happens everywhere. Female genital mutilation, people don't know, it's a child abuse. Yeah. It's an abuse.
It is.
It's a violence against women and girls. It's a violence against women and girls' rights.
Mm-hmm.
So people have different excuses of why they do it, but there are many, many different things come with it. So what I will do quickly, I will tell you, because I can't speak for everybody else. I can just speak for myself, right? I was cut at the age of 7 in Somalia, Somaliland, in Hargeisa. The woman who cut me cut my sister, who was 17 years older than me, because that woman was the famous woman around that area who was doing this cutting, right?
Yeah.
Also, language is really important. It's all is something we're learning, right?
Yeah.
FGM is a child abuse. It's an abuse, so we need to take it that way. People say it's my culture. I'm not gonna lie, I used to say a lot of the times it's my culture, it's nothing to do with religion, but again, it's the way we grow up and we were conditioned to talk about this. So the reality is, the woman who cut me cut my sister, who was 17 years older than me. By the time she got to me and my younger sister, she was an old woman. She couldn't even see anything, but she would say, I can do this with my eyes closed. The day of the cutting, like I said, my younger sister was cut first, because they always do the younger ones. Then I went through it. I was 7.
Yeah.
At the age of 11, when I was, sorry, when I was 7, when I turned 8, civil war started in my country. So we have to run. I knew nothing about war also. We ran and we left. And my dad is from Mogadishu, like I mentioned earlier. So we end up in Mogadishu, in the south of Somalia, the Italian colonized. And we went to school. I started school, middle school. That was the first time, because we got uniform. I was so excited. And within 9 months, the war started again in civil war. And everything collapsed. Now, when everything collapsed, I got sick. And nobody know why I got sick. So I will always run to my mom and dad's room. And I was like, my stomach hurts, because I didn't know what it was. Daddy took me to this Italian hospital. And they did ultrasound. They kept me there for like 48 hours. They did ultrasound again, because they thought I had a cyst. And they're like, oh, the cyst is growing. They operate me. And they realized it was my period that was accumulating inside.
Oh.
That it had nowhere to come out. Then they said, we're going to keep operating her until her period comes. So in Mogadishu, I had 2 operations in my stomach. And again, I'm going a bit fast forward, but I talked about this a lot. So videos and everything is out there of me talking about when the doctors opened me up, the Italian doctors in Mogadishu, they thought I had a cyst. It's only when they opened me up, they realized, because the blood was shooting. They said when they operated me, the ceiling, the doctors, you know, the goggles, everything, they were, it was blood, because It was my period that was accumulating
that's
inside.
That's crazy.
But this time the doctors were looking around and they were like, do we cut artery? Did we do something? And they didn't. They didn't cut no artery. It just, they didn't expect it to be my period. So that is how I end up in hospital. So I've been operated in Somalia twice. The civil war got bad. The hospital got bombed. My dad had to find a real small plane to take me to Djibouti, which is where my mom is from. And also the same doctors had a hospital there. End up in there. They kept me there for another 3 years. 2 years, sorry. Having keep operation, but they still couldn't get my period out. So that's when they said, we have to send, they said to my mom and dad, we need to send your daughter to Italy because we don't know why she's not having her period. We got a better equipment there. So we need to. So that's how me and my dad arrived in Italy. Had an operation from the hospital straight away. And as I had that, oh my goodness, sorry, this is supposed to be off. Sorry, it is off. You can stay there. So when we arrived in Italy, I went to the hospital. They kept me there. They operated me. I was in that hospital for a year because they didn't want to operate me because by this time I had 4 operations abdominally. And they just wanted to get my period out. And they operated me one day. I woke up the next 7 days later. After 5 years of people saying to me, doctors, wait for your next cycle. And I want people to know, I never had a cycle. I don't know what my period, what period is, right? So when they said to me, how that you had your period? I was like, okay. I looked at my dad. I was like, does that mean we can leave hospital now? He said, yes. But unfortunately, we couldn't go back home. We became a refugee. So I ended up in refugee camp in Holland. My daddy, who I love so much, like I said, I'm a daddy's girl, have to leave because in Holland, I said to him, I wanted to learn English. And my sister was here, my older sister. And I was like, I'm coming to the UK to learn English. So it's like, oh, it's okay. You can stay here. I stay with my auntie. I was living in a refugee camp, but for them to look after me. Daddy left for Denmark. I was there for 2.5 years. I went through the system. I was living in the refugee camps. And they would send me to every time I make friends. And that's another thing. Maybe we can do another one when it war and refugees. When it comes to podcasts, because I can't talk about it all here today. But it was, I grew up very fast. I grew up very, very fast to, you know, where I was like, I'm a woman now. So my sister sponsored me. I arrived in the UK on my 20th as a 20-year-old, 2 months before my 21st birthday. And I remember I arrived in Italy when I was 16. So 16 to 20, I'm traveling through, having operations in Italy, in refugee camp in Holland, waiting all of that. I arrived in the UK, I remember, and it was just before Christmas, 1997. And I was 20. Yeah, I'm telling everybody my age. Went to the Home Office. They took my fingerprints. They took pictures of me. And they were like, do you have a family here? I say, yeah, I have my sister. They say, go, we're going to get to you. So I actually got what's called indefinite leave to remain within 8 months of going to Sheffield. Within, before I did that, I said, I'm learning English. So next door was a college. And it was a college for also a newcomers, what they call ESOL, in learning English in like older age. My teacher was a Syrian and very broken English. I couldn't speak in Arabic or English, but very broken. I told her who I am and what I'm doing, and not knowing FGM was wrong, by the way. I just told her, I'm refugee, I want to learn English and I want to be a nurse. And she's like, okay. Within 3 months of me joining that college, she's like, Hoda, there's something going on. And it's called MVQ level 2 in health, but we sponsor you, so we'll pay you to go and do that. And I looked at her and I was like, how am I going to do that? I can't speak her English. I want to be a nurse, but I can't do that. She's like, just do it.
Mm.
And that is how everything started.
Mm. And who did you become?
I have become Hoda Muhammad Ali that I always been. But I moved to the UK, I mean in London. I met my husband, Elvis. His name is Elvis, I know. Well, was Elvis. I met him outside the job center the same day I moved from Sheffield. And I was outside the job center and I met him. And after that, we decided to get married 2 years later, even though I couldn't speak a proper English, right? So I met Elvis. I'm going to tell you the luckiest girl alive as well. Yeah. Anybody who can watch the play and go and look it online, you can see it. So yeah, I met my husband and we got married. We did a proper kind of wedding. So 2006, we got married, all Somali traditional clothes. 2006, I had one-year anniversary. We did the Caribbean style. So I had my white dress and all the Caribbean music and food.
But where is he from? Is he Caribbean?
He's born in London. His parents are from Barbados.
Ah, that's why Caribbean.
So Barbados became my second home.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. And again, I want you to come over there. So
we
can do a lot of things on the beach. Yeah, so we met. And, you know, when we got married going forward, is I couldn't get pregnant. I was just like, we married, we're not having contraception or anything. So I went back to the gynae because I had one since I was 11 years old. And the gynae said to me, Hoda, maybe you should have IVF because you had female genital mutilation, all these operations, you know, and you might not get pregnant because of adhesions. Adhesions are the scars that is left after operations. So I said, okay. And we went for IVF, got pregnant with the first cycle. I miscarried the day before my first scan. And I remember I was working as a nurse. I was taking the blood out of a patient and I just felt everything coming out of me. Like, not everything, but I felt that I had abdominal pain on the daytime. But I just thought, you know, when I never had any other problems with when it comes to medical. I always had gynae problem, right? So I'm thinking, oh, my abdominal is hurting. Maybe it's the period. Not thinking like I had IVF and I'm pregnant, right? I thought it's normal. So I passed there. I'm taking out of blood of this patient and I just couldn't. I literally blacked out. End up in intensive care unit. I end up in intensive care unit and I was there for like 3 weeks. And I woke up and I had tubes here on my neck. It's called a central line tube because I couldn't eat, so they're feeding me food here. But also, there was a lot of things that in my stomach. So they bought me what's called NG tube. So it can take the pile or whatever's building up in my stomach. And I remember coming out and I was like, tomorrow is another day. I'm the luckiest girl alive. Okay, you lost the baby. And you need to put weight back on because you're way too skinny. Because I'm 5'11", I was like 40 kilos when I came out of there, right? And I was like, okay, you know, I always look positive out of life. Everything in life is being positive. And that was, I came home, I put weight back on, I was ready. We had 5 embryos frozen. The day of the transfer, they took us a different room. Like, why are you taking us to this room? But also, it's horrible to be a medical professional. And also, I had the procedure already. I know. My husband doesn't know. You know, he's being strong for me, but I'm being strong for him. And yeah, they said none of the embryos survived.
Mm.
So we can't do transfer on you today. Means you cannot have IVF cycle today. It's like, why? What happened? The doctor came. They all came in different times. You know, the embryologists, my professor, all of them. And I remember the professor. She was amazing because she followed me from St. Mary Hospital all the way to Guy's and St. Thomas Hospital, which is where I was having the IVF. And they were like, hold on, we never seen this. I never seen a patient that none of the embryos survived. Five of them. We froze them different times, but none of them survived.
Mm.
And guess what I said, Maria? I said, tomorrow is another day. It's okay.
Yeah.
I have another IVF.
Mm.
And it's like, no, you can't.
Mm.
Because if we touch you, it can kill you.
Oh.
So you can never have IVF. You can never carry your own child.
Mm.
And if you need to do that, you need to get a surrogacy and an egg donor.
Mm.
For a while, I'm not going to lie, I haven't told this for people. Mm. I thought about it because I thought, my little sister, Ayan.
Yeah.
You know the one I was cut the same time? She's got five beautiful children.
Mm, wow.
Right. Yeah. Two boys and three girls, right? Mm. I thought, oh my God, Ayan can carry my own child. Ayan could do that. But I think something happens psychologically because I wasn't thinking straight, right? Because I didn't thought about how is Ayan going to get married and carry my own child. That means getting my husband's sperm and doing it. And it was just too much. So at that moment, And also my husband was the most supportive human being who said, we're not going to have a child. My wife is not going to die a child she don't have yet.
Yeah.
Because what they say to me, if I go through another IVF, it can kill me.
Yeah.
So it was powerful and it was beautiful. Yeah. So that is the journey that I had with FGM.
If you are resonating with this episode and you are ready to take your embodiment journey to the next level, I invite you to join the Feel membership, your guide on a journey of reconnecting with and embodying the power of your feminine energy. As a member, you'll get access to the daily embodiment practices created by our powerful experts and become a part of our community. Knowledge that you receive on this podcast is gold, but the real change happens when you integrate these learnings into your life. With our online membership, you can cultivate a consistent self-love and embodiment practice to nurture your energy. Our members are experiencing profound shifts from healing past traumas to reigniting their sensual fire to manifesting their wildest dreams. And we want that for you too. So if you are feeling the call to go deeper, check this podcast description for the link to join our membership.
Fast forward, at the age of 37, I was diagnosed with menopause, which is... I think that's going to be another episode because I really want to talk about that.
But do mention what...
Menopause is the worst thing has happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
I went through civil war twice, refugee camp in Europe, and IVF. Menopause is the worst thing because all of that, I was very active. I love working out. I will go to do yoga. I will go to the gym. I will be as a nurse, work 12 hours a shift, not driving, get my backpack, go on the bus. No, when menopause happened, it just shut me down. Literally everything. I don't really want to. I want to talk about it, but it makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because the reason it makes me sad is that here I am talking about FGM. Female genital mutilation and cutting. But then when I was diagnosed with menopause, it happens to women worldwide, regardless. Mm. But I never got the support.
Mm.
Never do I get the, what's the word? Do you know the education that you need?
Education,
do you know
yes.
what I mean? Because it's the education yes. you need. Yes. So it's again for me, it became all over again.
Yeah.
To learn. Yeah. Yeah. It became all over again for me to learn about my body. Why do I feel tired?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not sleeping at night? Why am I arguing with my husband, you know? Yeah. Why am I arguing with everybody? Because at that moment, everybody just made me angry.
Yeah, I'm hearing you in terms of, well, first of all, let's celebrate your courage and your positivity and the empowerment that you share with people through your story. Because I know how much you do for the children, for people around, for women. Mm-hmm. And you're raising important points on education that's missing, right? Even with the menopause, what you're saying is you haven't had and you haven't received the necessary education to go through it with less pain mm-hmm. and with more ease. And it is a big, big problem. You know, women have started to be included in medical research only recently. They have no idea. And the amount of medical mistakes people do to women and what's coming out only after in recent years is just crazy. And things like menopause, like pleasure, like sexuality, like menstruation, all of those things did not have enough attention, enough honor, and enough connection. Mm. And most women aren't tapping into their true potential as a result of that, because we are not told the right thing and not provided with access. So we can just honor and acknowledge that. And while I'm celebrating your courage and staying strong, you know, just staying strong. And another thing, I must mention what I'm celebrating about you and when I met you first time and learned all about the things that you do in your life is your passion and love for life. Because I know what you like, things you share and what you're doing and like how you celebrate yourself. It's just so beautiful. And I want you to talk about it in the remaining times of what I want to know. And I want to inspire our listeners and whatever they've gone through, even if they've gone through FGM, how they can celebrate their body.
Okay. First thing that we need to do is about owning your body.
Yes.
It took me so long to really understand of, like, my body belongs to me.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things I teach children now. Yeah. I left nursing, safeguarding consultant. Mm-hmm. I work with children, you know, teaching about their bodies and also talking about FGM. And, like, nobody have the right to touch you if you don't want her to be touched or do anything. So it started that way. So first of all, it starts owning your body.
Yes.
Secondly, sexuality is not something that is a lot open to where I come from. But I do realize, like I said earlier, sexuality is important. It's important to know how you feel and what works for you. So for many long time, I didn't know, but I realized talking.
Yeah.
Let's say that.
Yes.
When you have a new partner or you meet a partner, it's important to talk to them
mm-hmm.
of what works for you as a woman. And I say that because it's not just FGM. A lot of women and girls do not know what sexuality is.
Mm-hmm.
We just go and meet a partner and expect it. Miraculously know everything. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of the times, the man had sexual partners before us because I was told to keep virgin.
Mm-hmm.
But he was never told to keep virgin, right? So that means that man have a lot more experience. I think the most important thing is to own, to learn what works for you, which is what we were talking about. And just really using your voice, if you're not sexually active, even if you're not sexually active, it is so important to talk about your feelings and how you feel and what works for you. And that doesn't mean just partner or man. You could talk to your girlfriends because it's a start, right? That is my start. So I have an amazing, amazing friends. And one of them is literally, even though I'm older than her, and she calls me sometimes her auntie, I won't say her name, maybe I will, like literally became my my voice, like that guru I needed. You know, that person I needed. Her name is Dr. Leila Hussein. She knows.
You did say her name, yes.
You know, I'll say it. But it's a lot. It was a lot because when we met, I wasn't in this world. I wasn't talking about FGM and stuff. I was just learning things and things. But she showed me that what was happening. You know, everybody have one person to guide them, right? So Leila was there for me. But the older I get, I don't even talk to Leila anymore. You know, I mean, I talk to her, but not that way. So, I decide I own my sexuality. I also thought being married. I met my husband when I was 23 and I was virgin.
Mm-hmm.
I never had sex with anybody, right? Because that's what we were told.
Yeah.
You have to be virgin and keep yourself and do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we did. The first didn't come first. The first came after.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I find out about sex toys or sexual pleasure toys, like we call it. And it is one of the most amazing, liberating thing for me.
Mm.
I say that because when we say liberating, people think that somebody was holding me back. No, I was holding myself back because I didn't know. And it wasn't like any kind of toy. It wasn't like extreme. It was just a bullet.
Yeah, the classic.
My amazing friends. I have amazing people around me. Got that for me and haven't used it for a while. But one day I was like, my husband was on holiday. I was like, I'm going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Lordy, Lord have a mercy. I had orgasm 3 times in 10 minutes.
And how beautiful is that?
But also how scary is it? Do you know what I mean? When it's just by yourself. You know, the other day when we were talking about your podcast, we talked about female pleasure and how to pleasure yourself. But it was like, one, it was scary. But one, I was like, why have I been missing this?
Why have we been missing this? Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And never look back after that. And also, of course, it's important to speak to your partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you the hardest way that I learned was I was using it and I fall asleep. It's a DJ who was doing the music stuff. Oh my God, I'm telling things that I never talked about before. And he came back and he was like, he could just hear. He said, I can hear like vibration under the duvet. Because, you know, I knocked myself out.
Yeah.
Right. And that was it. That is how I introduce him to the sex toy. So I know that it can be really hard with the partners when you don't talk about these things. But hey, please, like your first thing with your first partner, when you talk about sexuality and what rocks your world.
What rocks your world, exactly. And very often, like, we're so scared to share something with our partners. Very often it can be actually very sexy and they can be very happy to know what pleases you.
I know.
Yeah, so it's like let's just talk about it.
I know. I think for us, what we talked about is one of the hardest things for sexuality and things, and also in different reasons of why we don't talk about this.
Yeah.
So it's really important, regardless that I'm a survivor of FGM or civil war, I didn't have that childhood, but I'm making it up with the knowledge I have as an adult now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not ashamed to say I learned this age or I learned this here, but the reality is that life is not easy, and also the way things are going for women or young girls is not fair. But I just hope that they can do their little bit research and see people like me and you, or you know, my friends, like other people who are doing an amazing work, to know that they're not alone and they can kick us
exactly
as long as they go forward.
Exactly. There is one thing I'm deeply passionate about is self-love and love body for love for the body and love for the own body. And as we were touching upon in the beginning of this podcast, a lot of women, even not those who had FGM, FGM was usually done against the person's will, but there are women who just actually really don't like their own vulvas and they want to make amendments to it simply because there is lack of self-love and lack of visibility. And one of my favorite practices that we always teach, and I mean, I find it so empowering, is to learn to adore your own vulva. Learn to look at her first. A lot of women don't even look there. Learn to look at her, then work through any feelings that arise, and then actually to give it love and to really adore it. And I know there is this amazing practice of creating a sculpture of your own vulva. And I'm wondering if you want to share a bit about it, because isn't it the most empowering practice of that women can do for love?
Yeah. Listen, yes. Thank you for reminding me again. First of all, it's important. Like yes. I said, it's not just FGM or fine longest woman. I guess women naturally were just told you can't look down there. Yeah. The first thing you do, give her a name.
Mm-hmm.
See Love how we're saying her name?
Mm.
My one, her name's Kalancha.
Oh.
Kalancho in Somali is the most beautiful name that you can give a woman. Kalancho, the most beautiful woman. The most. So I give her. So give her a name.
Yeah. Okay. Mine is Venus.
Venus. Well, nice to meet you, yes. Venus. Welcome nice to Kalancho. Yes, absolutely. Like, seriously. It's not about the outside world. Yeah. It's about, because she's there.
Yeah.
She gives life. Yes. You understand?
Yes.
Without our vulva, without our vaginas, vulvas and all, nobody would be on this earth. Exactly. So please, please acknowledge her, pray for her, caress her, give her a name.
Yes.
Give her a name, because if there's anything deserve name on this earth, is your vulva, my love. Wallahi. That is the main thing. By the way, I keep saying wallahi in Islam, is I swear to God, okay?
Yeah,
let me tell you something. So, I've been empowered, and I empowered her, Kalancho, okay? Kalancho starts with a Q as well, so you could say Kalancho. I don't know how you're going to pronounce it. So, I've been approached by an amazing sculpture.
Yeah.
He did a sculpture, it's called the World of Vulvas. Yes. You guys can go and look. This one is not out yet. And he'd never done anything, anybody who had FGM, FGMC. And I was like, why not? So it's going to come out. And it was crazy for me going there. Of course, I had a friend with me. It was a space. It was beautiful. But it was amazing to see my vulva in a plasticine looking at me.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like I'm looking at the mirror. She's looking at me like this. I was like, oh my God, is that what you look like? Nice to meet you, queen.
Yes.
So it's going to come out. It hasn't come out yet. This is the first time I'm also telling anybody. So guys, be kind to me. But when it comes out, it'll be everywhere. And I'm not ashamed of it.
Yeah.
The only thing is for me is the respect. You know, culturally, my culture, my religion is always that respect also. It's all about respect, but I'm not shy to talk about my sexuality, what works for me. And people think that women who had female genital mutilation do not have orgasm. They think women who had female genital mutilation cutting don't enjoy sex. They think women who had FGMC are not hot. They think women who had FGMC, we never had a desire to have sex. I tell you now, that is all a lie.
Yes.
It is all a lie. Trust me. That is just what they told you.
Yeah.
And I can vouch you for that, because nobody else can speak for my Kalancho, but I can. So they try to control my sexuality, but it's a lie to keep a girl out of sex because of FGM. Yeah. Doesn't work.
They tried and they couldn't. Because this is power and you own your body and you're the one deciding. Yeah, so much courage, so much power. I'm so inspired. And I feel like it's such an important message because other women who've experienced this, they know if they own their body, they can have whatever they like, whatever they wish for.
Like, what rocks your world? Maybe a cup of tea or coffee for the day. Who knows?
Yeah.
Tea doesn't rock my world. Coffee does.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
Our body is the same.
Yes. Love that. I feel so good listening to your story, and I'm just so proud of you.
Thank you so much, and I think we're coming to an end of today. I just want anybody who's gonna listen to your podcast and this one now, that hopefully would be able to reach out to ask the question they wanted to ask.
Yes.
To ask the question to anybody they ever wanted to ask questions, to be able to ask them, but also to empower themselves and know that you're not alone. You know, we all go through a lot of hardships and a lot of things, and it's not easy, but just remember, you're not alone, but use your voice and go and kick ass! That's my message.
That was Hoda Mohammed Ali on the Feminine Power Podcast, and you can access Hoda's website in this episode description for further connections. If this episode touched you, and if you have any feedback or comments, please leave them right here under the comments of this episode on any platform where you are listening to the Feminine Power Podcast. And if you resonate with our mission to share inspiring stories and to help more women to truly elevate their lives by connecting to their bodies, please leave this podcast a rating. It helps so much. So few people ever do it without realizing how important these ratings are for our podcast, as they help us to reach more women and inspire more people with this mission. So please, if you resonated and if you're listening all the way up until the end of this episode, just spend a moment and leave us a rating. Thank you so much. That was Maria Grinina, the host of the Feminine Power Podcast and the founder of Feel. And that's it for today. I hope this episode has left you feeling inspired, empowered, and more connected to your truth. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to the Feminine Power Podcast and leave us a rating. If you want me to ask any specific questions to our future guests, please do leave us a comment wherever you are listening to this podcast, and I will definitely address them. Your support means the world and helps us reach more women with this transformative work. And if you're ready to experience even more feminine magic, I invite you to explore the Feel membership. Head to feelup.co/membership or find the link in this podcast description to learn more and claim your spot. Until the next time, keep shining your light, keep embracing your unique journey, and keep rising into the powerful human you were born to be. I'm your host, Maria Grinina.